Jack hadn't moved in over 2 hours. Hell, he'd barely blinked. Just stared at those four words and digit. Incorrect password. 9 attempts remaining. The ominous feeling of dread swept through him. He hadn't felt like this since 7th grade when Billy McDermott said, "You're dead, twerp. After school, I'm gonna kill you." He'd been able to avoid Billy for 3 days before he finally caught up with him and took a pretty good shellacking from the formidable bully. The beating only ended when Jack accidentally thumbed Billy in the eye trying to fend off the blows. Jack's mother was on him all the time to trim his nails. On the day of the fight, he was glad he'd let them go. The fight left Jack with a busted lip, black eye, and swollen face for a week. Billy sported a bloodshot and flamed left eye that looked infected for nearly a month, and he never picked on Jack again. Still glued to the computer, Jack exhaled, wondering if, ultimately, he failed, how would they do him? Sherman's voice echoed in his head again, zero tolerance. Would he see it coming? Could he avoid them as he'd done Billy? Should he even try? Would it be quick, a double tap to the back of his head, or slow and painful to make a point? And when did the clock start? Jack picked up the note again. 30 days starting now. So, from when he entered the room, picked up and read the note, or from when the omnipresent, disembodied, they left the note? He studied his watch, 29 days, 21 hours. Give or take, he whispered, then removed the thumb drive, pried himself from the laptop, and returned to pacing about the room. His eye caught the bottle of O.L. Pappy Van's magic elixir. He could use a belt, one good stiff one, then back at it. On the coffee table sat two doubles glasses wrapped in paper. Classy. First-rate hotels always left those little creature comforts. Of course, they also wanted you to dip into the minibar. Jack unwrapped the glass and frowned. He was not one to use alcohol as a crutch and knew he should approach his task with as much mental acuity as possible, but just how much time did he have left? He envisioned the amber liquid swirling slowly about in his glass, ice tinkling, the legs clinging just long enough to entice, inhaling the bouquet, notes of chocolate and vanilla. That first sip, fiery, but not too hot, on the tip of his tongue. One drink. One, to settle his nerves and back to the salt mine. But if he was going to do it, he was going to do it right. He needed ice and a Monte Cristo. Jack stuffed the iron key into his coat pocket, donned the garment, and headed out. He stepped inside the elevator, pressed the L button for the lobby, and looked about the elevator car for any cameras, wondering how many recording devices were in the hotel and his room. A heavy mist was falling as Jack exited the front lobby. He stood under the porte cochere, collecting his bearings. A bored cabbie, grabbing a quick smoke next to his car, nodded and put out the cigarette, anticipating a fare. For a moment, Jack thought about heading over, but if he got in and the driver called him by his first name, he might just soil himself. He waved off the cabbie and scanned 16th Street, which was devoid of any activity. Unusual. 3 blocks down and across Lafayette Square on F Street was Lester's, an old-style smoke shop that had been around since Hector was a pup. Everyone from pages to presidents frequented Lester's. Once upon a time, you could get a real Monte Cristo, Cuban, not Dominican, even after the U.S. stopped normalized relations with Cuba, for a while anyway. Jack suspected a box or two was secreted somewhere in the shop for select dignitaries. He looked at his watch. 10:38. Lester's should still be open. He'd last set foot in the tobacco shop 5 years ago, but if he remembered right, the store didn't close until midnight. People keep long hours in D.C. Heading south onto 16th Street, Jack stepped from under the cochere, flipped up his collar, and turned his face skyward, letting the mist sprinkle and bead upon his face, hoping the cold water might awaken and jumpstart his senses. When he arrived at the intersection of 16th and I, Jack noticed two things. The mist was now a dense fog, and he'd picked up a tail. He didn't see or hear anyone behind him, but knowing when he was being followed was one of a few gifts bestowed upon him by nature. His spidey sense was tingling. Jack made a beeline for President's Park. The grounds around the White House would be patrolled and secure. He ducked behind the statue of Andrew Jackson and set his ears a task. Several minutes passed without a sound. Jack scooched from behind the statue's base and tried peering through the dense miasma, but he couldn't see more than 10 feet. "Well, if I can't see them," he whispered under his breath and shot out from behind Mr. Jackson. Surreptitiously, he snaked his way through the park using various monuments for cover. Satisfied, he most likely had lost his shadow, he headed to Lester's. The last time Jack had been in the smoke shop, Malcolm was the proprietor. He doubted the old man was still there or still alive. 5 years ago, he guessed the Nubian to be in his early 90s. The old African was half the reason Jack frequented the place. He had such a quiet, dignified manner and spoke with such eloquence, just a hint of a British accent, and he knew his tobacco. Jack was pleased to see the old wooden shingle marking the place still hung outside. The wood was checked and weathered and the white lettering faded, but it was there. He peered through the glass of the front door and frowned. Some skinny, young, black kid, maybe 18 or 19, sat behind the counter married to his phone. Jack entered and the bell above the door announced his arrival. Jack frowned again as the kid never looked his way, just kept playing with his phone. The old place still looked the same. Exotic wood paneling still covered the walls and the floor still squeaked in the right spots. It smelled the same too. Not like smoke, but a heavenly, rich tobacco aroma. Jack's salivary glands kicked in. He swallowed and cleared his throat, ahem. "What's happening, Jack?" the kid asked, his eyes never leaving the phone. The hair on the back of Jack's neck stood up, and like a slap to the back of his head, a realization came flooding from the recesses of his brain to the forefront. The bartender had used his given name as well. He supposed that could be explained by the fact Sherman knew he would be there. He, or one of his people, could have told the bartender, but why would they? And no one, only Jack himself, knew he'd be coming here. "H, how'd you know my name?" snapped Jack. The clerk looked up. "My name? How do you know my name?" The youngster shrugged and shook his head slightly. "It's just a saying, man. You know, that's the fact, Jack. Make a new plan, Stan." "Why, no," he offered, apologetically. Jack eyed the teen cautiously. Could be he was a relative of Malcolm's. Still, it would not explain him knowing his name, but... "What's your name, kid?" "Julius." "Julius. As in Irving?" "Nah, man, Caesar," answered the kid with a big grin and Roman salute. "Julius, any chance Malcolm's still around?"
"Who?"
"Oh, the old dude. Methuselah."
"Methuselah?
It's what we called him, around the hood. Never knew his name." Jack sighed and shook his head, brooding over the lack of respect. "Monte Cristo, two please." "Whites?" asked Julius, putting his phone down and removing a key from a small hook on the wall behind him. Jack paused before answering. "Number twos." The kid frowned, jerked his head, and hissed, "Shit, where you think you are, Havana?" "Worth a shot," thought Jack, and was a bit impressed the kid knew what he meant. "Connecticut's," he sighed. Julius headed to the back of the store. Jack heard the click of tumblers and the whoosh of air as the door of the walk-in humidor opened. All the years he'd frequented the joint, he'd never been in the climate-controlled room, never been invited. Jack got on toes and craned his neck for a glimpse, but he couldn't make anything out. Julius closed and locked the humidor and made his way back to the counter. "Tubes," he asked, handing the cigars to Jack. "You know your tobacco," moaned Jack, lazily waving the stogie under his nose. "Shit, Jack, I'm a sommelier."
"That a fact?"
"That's a fact, Jack. You want to talk leaf? You came to the right place. Carolina, North or South, Cuban, Dominican, Honduran, Nicaraguan. You name it, I claim it." "And where did a youngster like you gain such knowledge?"
"My grandfather," Mama sighed. "Mi abuelo.
Left the island in 61. Landed in Miami, made his way to Bolte and then here."
"He ran a smoke shop?"
"Nah, custodian at the Supreme Court. But his family had a tobacco farm and fabrica back in Vuelta a Bajo. All he talked about was returning one day and getting the place back from Castro." Julius watched as Jack continued inhaling, appearing to no longer be listening.
"Tubes," he asked again.
"One, please." Julius reached under the counter, produced a small aluminum tube, handed it to Jack, then rang up the sale. 3870, one.
Jack handed the kid his platinum card. Julius nodded his approval. Doing all right for yourself, Jack? I get by, said Jack, in between sniffs. Receipt?
Certe.
Say wa. Latin for truly, certainly, of course, answered Jack, placing one cigar in the tube and the other inside the breast pocket of his coat, then taking the receipt from Julius. Jack turned to exit the store and stopped. Julius. Yeah. And back door, he asked, scanning the street through the front window. Julius joined in, moving his head side to side to avoid glare. You duck in the 5-0? 5-? No, not the police. Not sure who, really. Julius was still bopping his head side to side, making it too obvious. Skip it, said Jack, opening the door. More Latin. Take care, said Jack, with a curt nod and exited the store. Take it any way I can get it, Jack. Out on the street and in the foggy blackness, Jack was weighing his options. The person following him was probably one of Sherman's associates. Protection? Well, protection or not, Jack didn't like being followed. He headed in the opposite direction of the park and his hotel. He couldn't see it through the fog, but a car was approaching. The deep, thumping bass of gangster rap trumpeted its arrival. A midnight blue Beamer with blacked-out windows oozed his way. The driver's window rolled down a few inches. Instinctively, Jack reached in his pocket to protect his most valuable possession and held his breath. A lit cigarette but flew out of the vehicle's vacuous interior in Jack's direction and hit the pavement inches from his feet. The car continued its slow cadence and Jack exhaled. He turned the corner and doubled back down the alley behind Lester's in his hotel's direction. Halfway down the alley, a small yellow light provided the only illumination for the lane. When Jack got to the pathetic glow, he saw it was the back of Lester's. The heavy steel door was ajar and something wet was on the two back steps. Not moisture from the rain or fog. It looked red. Blood? Do you have it? Jack jumped 3 inches out of his skin. Jesus. A tall man, dressed in a fedora and what looked to Jack to be an expensive leather trench coat, appeared out of the fog, stopping a few feet from him. Jack looked at the man and glanced back to the wet spots. Have what? Who are you? The man sighed, put his gloved hands in the coat's pockets, and stepped forward. Do you have it? He repeated. I, stammered Jack, shaking his head. Don't know a dash. The blinding pain and white light took Jack by surprise as much as the fact he never saw the punch coming. Fuck. Fuck, yelled Jack, recoiling back, doubling over in pain and covering what he thought might be a broken nose with his left hand while his right danced about his person for something to catch the blood. A neatly folded, crisp, white handkerchief, embroidered with the initials RJJ on the corner, was offered to Jack, who snatched the cloth and nursed his bleeding nose. The man gave Jack several moments to gather himself, then sighed while looking off into the fog. I loathe repeating myself, Mr. Kemp. Are you going to make me ask again? Focus. Jack straightened himself up. Just so we're on the same page. The man sighed. You met with Sherman early today. Did you accept the challenge? Jack's mind was racing. Was this his out? If he'd lost the thumb drive, he'd be to blame. But if it was stolen? Sure, he'd be out a cool mill, but he'd be alive. The man was a good 3 inches taller than him, slim build, early 40s. In the fog and dim light, he couldn't make out the eye color, but the hair was brown. Jack wanted to be sure and give an accurate description. He took the thumb drive out of his pocket and thrust his cupped hand at the stranger. Here, take it. The man shoved Jack's hand away. Put that away, he hissed. Astonished, Jack returned the iron key to his pocket. What then? We just wanted to make sure it was in your possession and that you were working on the situation. We. Surely, Mr. Kemp, you must have realized there would be other interested parties? Jack nodded. But the notion hadn't occurred to him. The money had blinded him. Of course, when you've broken the code and retrieved the information, we'd like first dibs, and we'd double your fee, perhaps even triple. Triple? High stakes, Mr. Kemp. Jack swallowed the blood that was draining into his mouth, making a loud gulp. The man mistook the exaggerated swallow for fear and gave Jack a sinister smirk. Hi, indeed. You're sitting in the Ivy Room, Mr. Kemp, Table 1. The man nodded and returned his attention back to the fog. Well, we're always here if you need any assistance. Jack guffawed sarcastically, mopping the blood still pouring from his nose. Now, Mr. Kemp, the sweat on the snout was simply to secure your attention. He reached into his inner coat pocket, retrieved a business card, and tried handing it to Jack. After a solid minute passed without Jack accepting the card, he stuffed it into Jack's outer breast coat pocket, giving it a pat. Two things, Mr. Kemp.
Yeah.
In Arlington, 4th Street, a little place called Village Tobacco. I think you'll find what you're looking for. Tell them Roger sent you. And two. The man turned and began walking away. Jack watched him disappear into the fog. He removed the blood-stained handkerchief from his face. Dick, he called out into the mist. Jack watched the man disappear into the fog, the echo of his footsteps swallowed by mist and silence. He pulled the blood-stained handkerchief from his face, stared at the embroidered initials, RJJ, and muttered, Dick, into the haze.